And welcome to another segment of Our Story. We appreciate you coming and visiting with us again. And just as a quick reminder, we are with you live each and every Wednesday at 7:30 on Channel 77, followed by replays on Saturday at 1 on Channel 78, and again the following Wednesday on 78. So we thank you for taking the time to visit with us, and hopefully you'll be able to take something of value away from here with you when you go. We have a lot of coverage we're going to do this evening. We've got a lot of subject matter we're going to talk about, and we're going to get into some things with Professor Walter Block from Loyola University, who is an economist, and we wanted to let you know that that's coming so you can sit tight. But before we get into that, I want to talk about some of the things that are going on with this election year climate. We are talking about the debates that they are having, and actually they had one this evening right before we came on. But I wanted to make a quick observation concerning the debates, especially the one they had last week. And that is this. I was interested to learn and to look and to see that out of all of the candidates running, five were chosen for the debates. Now, in a free democracy, quote unquote, how do you determine which candidates are viable and which candidates are not? In fact, it's grossly unfair and unjust to select someone as your slate of candidates and then give them to your audience as being the legitimate candidates. Well, if it were left up to me, this is one more reason why the myth of democracy in America is just that, truly a lie and a myth. Now, one of the things that we want to deal with today are the situations that we have had to live with and deal with post-Katrina. And I have some footage that I want to share with you because the footage shows a number of problems the city, state, and federal government has. Here we are, November the 1st, 2006, more than a year after Katrina. And what do we find ourselves doing? We find ourselves still waiting on aid and assistance, and not handouts from the federal government, but I'm talking about monies from the insurance companies and monies that have been allocated by the federal government for reconstruction of the post-Katrina catastrophe. Now, they have us as if we are recipients of welfare when many of us, most of us, have paid some hard premiums to still be fighting with companies about whether we're going to be able to be made whole or not. But we're going to get back to that. What I'm going to show you is footage that I'm 99.9% sure you haven't seen before, at least not in the media. But this footage is going to show you, without a doubt, the resilience of our people here in New Orleans, of taking care of each other, and then the disaster that happened to our people, and the lies that were told about what was really happening, and the fact that they could have gotten us out of here the second day, the first day, but given that even on the second day they could have gotten us out of here. They didn't do it. They refused to do it. And they have left us here just as if we were like the same group of people that this happened to many, many decades ago, which I refer to as the indigenous people in this country, whom they ran off and stole their land and incarcerated them and had reduced them to mere nothing. Let's roll that first clip, please.
On the other side of the blue house, there's Will and another guy. We just been a rescue effort. I would go, but I don't swim. I don't have a life vest also. But I think even if I was a good swimmer, I wouldn't worry about the life vest. They are trying to rescue a lady in the red house over the way. They don't have much camera time, but we're going to get them over there some kind of way. That tree used to be a full tree. You couldn't even see the sky through that.
Now, this is Nehru Street, three blocks off of Franklin Avenue. That's what you're viewing now, is Nehru.
This is the house.
Is your grandma?
Look.
Grandma?
Look at your grandma. Look at your grandma.
Say hi, grandma.
Say hey, grandma.
Ma!
Don't be scared, baby. Just hold them tight. You're going to be there. This is for the rescue. We must thank Will and, hey, what, little man, what's your name?
Watt.
Red in the middle.
Now, I hasten to point out that this is one of our very own war correspondents here, Brother William, who is leading the pack here. And they're showing you fish on Nehru.
Once you get back that wood business, straight shot. All right. I'm going to sign off right now, sticking out here from in the front up there. All right, we're going to the front. See you later. Sign off. Hey, it's a hurricane. Get a backstroke. No. Hey, baby, can you backstroke? Look here. Did Patty set in on Grandma? Huh? Well, what's in the water chest?
Huh?
What's in the ice chest?
Some of her stuff.
Okay. All right. We'll meet y'all around front.
Another
rescue saved by old tired-ass Will.
Yeah, you're right.
You got
to go. Will, go right another way. At the fence.
Smoke the rig. That's Will, little rig there. He is qualifying for the Alaskan pole race. He invented that boat. Right there, he invented that.
I think he qualified.
That's
for
the one. That's the one he went found someplace. We're not gonna say it's swiped. We can say he found that one floating. It was floating.
Check out
his work. Then look at it. There's his dog. He found that dog yesterday, but that's his dog, his buddy, his partner. That dog earned his friendship, made some friendship. Where you going? I go with you. Thrash off. He better than Perry, I tell you that.
Yeah.
No water to wash up, no water to flush toilet. The kids are really... should be in the hospital with all the rashes and the dirty water they have to walk through to get here. It's really bad. No assistance, no police.
You're right.
Just the man in the water.
Yeah.
Put on the bridge.
Yeah, look at it. They still, this man just fed up.
Right.
You know,
you got people out there, they've been told, they keep saying the same thing, and they're not moving at all.
Right. And then what happened? Then they asked you to come here?
They told us some of the places they have people raping, killing kids. Everything going on here. Riots, everything. Gunshots, everything. They're shooting each other up in here.
Because it's no security.
It ain't no security.
No security. We're on our own. We are on our own. Look at that bridge over there.
The part that shows you they're bringing in the helicopters. This is called the Chinook, which is a troop movement transport helicopter. They brought troops in with these type of aircraft, and they leave empty. They could have been ferrying people out of there with these same crafts, and I know they have enough in this part of the country that they could have gotten people out of there in a 24-hour or less period of time. Trucks you see there, they came in afterwards. They came through the water. So the federal government was able to get in and out of New Orleans during the flood. Why were we forced to stay here?
Trying to save anyone. They got people jumping off the Superdome.
The buses are here.
That's true.
The buses are here.
And they're not taking them up. They're worried about the prisoners.
They're waiting until 3, 4 o'clock and say they ain't going to move nobody because it's about to get dark.
No, but they're worried about the prisoners. Last night they moved prisoners until 1 o'clock in the morning.
Most soldiers in here.
Most soldiers.
And they ain't taking nobody out. You see that shit?
We are in a refugees camp. Soldiers are jumping out, running in like crazy.
That's what's going on.
Ain't nothing happening with getting the people out. Now, do you think they can put that many people in the back of that airplane and fly them out of here? No. They got kids that need help, but we can't get that.
We can't get it.
Now, I would...
Empty helicopter leaving the Superdome.
If there was another way around, that the people wouldn't be getting the assistance they need. Yeah. All right. So, all right, I would like to let you know that this is a bad team. They are on there.
It's a man affair. Michael Vick is number one.
Michael Vick is number one.
Hey.
If we ever get out of here, we'll be number one. I mean to tell you.
I'm suing the Superdome. It's snake. They treat us like animals.
Oh, that's how they treat us. I wish you.
And as you can see, the problems at the Superdome were created, were caused. They had no one there in authority, no one there giving any instructions, no one there leading the way, and for any way, form, or fashion, chaos, planned chaos. And these are the kinds of things that we as a community and we as a people have to deal with every day here in New Orleans and around the country and around the world. Now, you know, it's time, it's been past time, that we stop accepting this kind of treatment. Now, one of the questions for this evening is going to be, what are the alternatives? And we are going to discuss with the professor from Loyola, who is an economist, what are the alternatives? What are some of the kinds of things that we can do or look towards to answer and resolve some of these problems? Welcome to our story, Professor Walter Block. Appreciate having you, and we thank you for taking this time out.
My pleasure to be here.
I'm going to ask you, what is the overall solution for the problems of the negligence that the government has shown and the lack of leadership that we get from our elected officials? What would you say would be the answer to this?
Well, I think that the answer is free enterprise and capitalism. We've seen in the clip that you've just showed, and it's a horrible clip showing the plight of the people, that government is not responsive. if you compare this to private enterprise, there's a sort of a fail-safe mechanism working in private enterprise that doesn't work with government. For example, if we go to a pizza place and I don't like the pizza, I don't go there again. If you don't like the pizza, you don't go there again. Amin doesn't like it, he doesn't go there again, and eventually that pizza place goes broke, which is good because we want to weed out inefficiency. But unhappily, the same thing doesn't work in the field of government. When FEMA screws up, and they screw up royally, do they go broke? No, they get more money. They're still in business, which is a horror. See, I don't mind so much mistakes. We're humans. To be human is to err. We all make mistakes. What I want is a system that has an automatic feedback mechanism that penalizes mistakes. And when the mistakes are penalized, if we have this system that continually reduces mistakes, then we have a better system. Whereas if you have the political system and you rely on government, whether it's federal or state or local, it doesn't matter. That helicopter taking off without people, if there was a private helicopter doing that that we had hired to be our safeguard, we'd never pay them again. They'd go broke. But it was a government one, so there's no way we can stop them. You didn't show this clip, but there were a whole bunch of yellow school buses that were sort of half up to their hubcaps in water or higher. Those buses could have taken people out of here. But no, they didn't. The people responsible for that are political. The problem with politicians is you only get to vote for them every 4 years. And then when you get to vote for them, you get to vote for them on the basis of all or none kind of deal. You can't pinpoint your vote. For example, you might like politician 1 on policies 1, 3, 5, and 7, and politician 2 in policies 2, 4, 6, and 8. But you can't distinguish between those two. It's a package deal. Whereas in the market, you can vote for a red tie or a blue shirt or this kind of a wristwatch or this kind of a pen. And in that way, the people who serve us in the market are much more receptive to our responses as consumers than are the politicians receptive to our desires in that field.
Let me ask you something. We're talking about this utopian system that would be created by privatization. Where in the world do we find this system operating today?
Well, I don't think it's utopian. I mean, compare Walmart with FEMA. Walmart was bringing down all sorts of trucks with ice and water and food and orange juice and milk for children and stuff like that, and they were turned back by FEMA. I don't think it's very utopian. We have all sorts of businesses. We have Microsoft. They produce great computers. I don't see what's so utopian about that. And if they didn't produce great computers, somebody else would, and Microsoft would go bankrupt. So what I'm talking about is a system of competition which brings about a better product at a lower price.
What I'm asking is, where is this system set up and operating today?
Well, it's right here, in part. In other words, what we now have is a mixed economy where part of it is capitalistic and part of it is, I don't know what, socialist, fascist, whatever. And we can see that the good parts are the parts where there's no problem. Where is the crisis of pizza? Where is the crisis of red ties? There is no such thing.
Okay.
But I tell you, if the government were in charge of making red ties or blue shirts or something, there'd be shortages, there'd be crappy shirts and crappy ties, because we wouldn't have any way to get rid of them. Now, if you're asking, where is there a society where the entire thing is free enterprise and there's no government at all? Well, you've got me. There ain't no such place now. But there are places that are closer and further away. The places in Africa and South America have heavy government operation and are very poor because of it. The places in Western Europe and North America have less government relative to those places and therefore are more prosperous. So we can see that the market works and produces and satisfies consumers, whereas the government sector doesn't. And in the Soviet Union, it was practically all government sector, and we saw what happened there. I mean, people were trying to get out of there. The Berlin Wall, the traffic was one way. It was out of the communist East and into the capitalist West. So we have all sorts of evidence that shows people voting with their feet against socialism and for free enterprise.
What countries in Europe were we talking about?
Well, I guess the countries in Europe that are more free enterprise are France and Germany and Sweden and UK, and the countries in the 80s anyway that were less free enterprise were Hungary and the Soviet Union and Czechoslovakia and places like that.
Now, don't we see, aren't we finding the people there protesting as vigorously as we find in this country?
The people in which country are protesting?
Germany, France, UK, with problems. I mean, they're not, even UK is a socialist country, but the people are protesting. I mean, you we don't get it on a daily dose here, but in the news we get it on a periodic basis of various demonstrations. Some of them are peaceful and other times they're not. But I mean, they seem to be having their fill of problems there too.
Well, I don't say that the free enterprise system is utopian and that it solves all problems. I do say that the people who benefit from capitalism have things like air conditioning and refrigerators and TVs, and the people that don't have it have much less of that. They're very, very much poorer.
Brother Me?
You talked about Europe and you talked about Africa. First of all, what countries are we talking about in Africa? Talking about the market and about the government, and they're poor because of the government. It's a heavy government over in Africa.
Well, pretty much all the countries in Africa have less economic freedom than countries elsewhere.
Why?
Why? That's a good question. That's a nasty, vicious question.
Let me go back, because you said that if the government wasn't there, then there would be more freedom. It would be more of a free market, correct? Okay. Reason why it is that Africa is poor, which it really is not, is because they're stealing from Africa. They have been for the longest. How can a country that we get all our diamonds, jewelries, and just about all our gold from be so poor? Because of a government.
And that's private. That's privatization.
It is private,
too.
Well, I think that the countries in Africa, to a great extent, the government is kleptocracy, where the dictators steal the money from the people and put it in Swiss bank accounts.
Something like America.
In America, we do that too, but to a much less degree. In America, you have more economic freedom than in parts of Africa and parts of South America. And North Korea, the people in North Korea, I mean, we have almost controlled experiments. In economics, you usually don't get a controlled experiment. But North and South Korea were bust down the middle in the war, mm-hmm. and they were the same people, the same language, the same human capital, the same intelligence, whatever. And all of a sudden, the North is following one system, and they're practically starving. And the South is following a different system, not a perfect system. They have problems there, too. But the problems that they have in South Korea are as nothing compared to the problems they have in North Korea. The same with East and West Germany.
Let me just...
Wait, hold it for a second.
Can I?
Let me ask you something, because there's you're painting this picture of private companies being able to administer or to govern better than the structured political systems that we now have. And realizing and understanding that, I'm looking, well, first of all, the world of economics is controlled by a few families or a few of the higher echelon individuals that control the flow of money, not only in America, but throughout the world. And if you have a free economy, then how is it possible that you just have this certain group that just controls all of the wealth and makes sure that the distribution of wealth is more in their favor than it is in the rest of our favor?
Well, there are really two kinds of companies. One earns its money totally on the market. For example, Microsoft and Walmart. Then there are other companies like Bechtel and Halliburton, where the lion's share of their receipts don't come from people making choices to support them, but rather come from government contracts, government favoritism, what have you. The second system, the Bechtels and the Halliburtons and these other companies, I don't call that free enterprise, I call that fascism. That's similar to the Nazi system of Stuka and BMW and companies like that that were hand in glove with Hitler. I'm certainly not advocating that, and I agree with you that does occur to a great degree. But I would oppose that kind of capitalism. I wouldn't call that free market capitalism. I would call that state monopoly corporate capitalism.
But Microsoft and Walmart, you would favor.
Yes, Microsoft and Walmart, I think, aren't hand in glove with the government. The way they make their money is by satisfying consumers. Microsoft started in some guy's garage or backyard. McDonald's was one little burger place. I would put McDonald's in the good companies. Walmart started as a grocery store. And how did they get big? By satisfying consumers.
Well,
that's wonderful.
Well, I'm going to let you get into it just a second. Now, Walmart has a lot of problems as far as their help is concerned. I mean, they hire the handicapped and the elderly. They pay them terrible wages. And, I mean, they just treat them like they're dwarfs or something. Microsoft, on the other hand, has had a number of problems because who is their competition?
IBM, Apple, Mac.
And Microsoft started out together, and Microsoft was, I don't know, usurped whatever they created together and ran with it. So I'm getting this understanding and this impression that business, big business, little business, any business, only thrives at someone else's demise.
Yeah, at someone else's expense.
Yes.
Well, I don't think that's true. I think that the essence of business is voluntary trade. You've got a lovely hat there. If I offer you $10 or $100 for the hat, and you value the $100 more than the hat, and I value the hat more than the $100, we make a trade, and that's the essence of business. We both gain. You value the $100 more than the hat. I value the hat more than the $100. There's mutual benefit. Whereas when Halliburton gets its money, it gets it through the government who taxed people coercively. It's very, very different. Now, I don't think that Walmart is exploiting anyone. We've got a new Walmart out in New Orleans, and people come and they shop there. They must pay enough wages because they keep employees. If they were exploiting the workers, they wouldn't get any workers. The workers would all quit. So I think that Walmart helps the poor. Walmart hires the poor. Walmart sells to the poor and to the middle class and to the rich, too, because they have great service. I don't see that Walmart is the enemy. Walmart is a voluntary operation. As soon as we didn't like Walmart, they'd go broke, unlike FEMA.
I'm sorry. You really think so?
Yeah. If most people didn't like Walmart and refused to shop there, they'd be out like a... Look, there was the Edsel. This might be before your time, but I'm sure you remember the Edsel. This was a car that the Ford Motor Company put out that costs zillions of dollars. People hated it. Mm-hmm. People, Johnny Carson was making jokes about it. He was sort of the Jay Leno of the day. They lost zillions on the Edsel. Had they kept going one more Edsel, they would have been out of business. Yes, if you look at the Fortune 500 companies for the last 10, 20, 30 years, you're going to see a lot of companies that seem very powerful, and all of a sudden they're not there.
Let me, since you remember the Edsel, let me take you back to 1962, when Chrysler was on the verge of bankruptcy. And Chrysler developed a turbine engine for a car. They produced 50 and put one in each state as a test model.
Yeah.
The turbine would run off of anything flammable, rubbing alcohol, drinking alcohol, kerosene, anything that would burn, they could put into this engine. When they developed 50 and put it in 50 states for a tryout, the government came in and virtually paid Chrysler not to produce that car. Do you recall that?
You have the advantage of me here. I don't remember that situation. But in terms of the General Chrysler case, they were almost on the verge of bankruptcy, and the government had to come and rescue them. This is horrible. What they should have done is let Chrysler fail because people weren't willing to pay them enough money to pay for the costs of making automobiles. When the government gets in and puts its finger on the scale, then we no longer have justice. You know, the justice is supposed to be blind, the woman with two scales here. If the government puts its big fat thumb on one of the scales, then it violates consumer sovereignty.
But doesn't the government underwrite protect and maintain big business in this country?
Yes, it does, and it's horrible, and they should stop doing it, because that's the direction of economic fascism. What I'm saying is that they should stop doing that, and they should just allow business, assuming that there's no fraud or anything like that, and that would be a legitimate government function to stop fraud, at least in the limited government philosophy of classical liberalism. But when they... It's sort of like when the referee grabs the ball and starts dunking it, you know, how are you going to have a basketball game? The purpose of the government in this limited government philosophy is to be the referee, to make sure that nobody punches out anybody or rapes or murders or what have you or commits fraud. But when the government starts helping some companies, it has to hurt other companies because it's doing it with taxes. So I think we have to distinguish between laissez-faire capitalism on the one hand, which is good, and corporate monopoly, state capitalism, or fascism on the other.
To go back, you talked about North Korea and South Korea, and I'm going to come back to what we're talking to for now.
You said North Korea is doing better than South Korea.
No, the opposite. South Korea is doing better than North Korea.
They are?
Oh, yeah, sure. In North Korea, they're practically starving. Not practically, but... I think you're making a slip of the tongue here.
Well, I mean, that's what they print in the press here, but that's not the world picture now. That from what I've seen, North Korea has been holding its own because they've been partnershipping with China quite a bit, and they seem to be doing quite well.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. Take another case, East Germany and West Germany. Again, the same people, the same language, the same culture, the same religion, the same everything. And due to the accident of World War II, the country was split at about 60-40%. And there was one-way traffic. People were trying to get out of East Germany and try to get into West Germany. East Germany was an economic shambles. West Germany was magnificent compared to East Germany. And again, we have this control experiment where you have socialism in the East and semi-capitalism in the West. And the market speaks. People speak.
All right, let me, you talked about Walmart and McDonald's.
Yes.
You talked about that businesses don't thrive when one of them goes down. Like you have Walmart, Burger King rallies, Popeyes, and you got churches.
Yeah.
Why is there a Popeyes on this corner and a church is right across the street from it? Why is there a McDonald's on this corner and a Burger King right across the street from it?
Well,
because if Burger King wasn't there, there would be no competition.
Well, you don't have to have competition right across the street. You can have two blocks down or three blocks
across. If there were no Burger Kings and only McDonald's,
yeah,
then there would be no competition, so they couldn't sell at the price that they're selling it.
Well,
first off, hold on.
Okay, go ahead.
Secondly, you're saying that McDonald's and Burger King are satisfying their customers.
Yes.
No, they're killing their customers. Mm. Really?
Which is another question, brings up another question about big business. Do we sacrifice people's health for profit purposes?
Look, they're satisfying their customers in the eyes of the customers, otherwise the customers wouldn't be lining up there. Now, maybe in some sort of overarching sense, like take cigarettes.
Oh.
I would say cigarette manufacturers are satisfying their customers. And my proof or my evidence for this is that people buy involuntarily. Nobody comes up with a gun to a guy and say, hey, you better buy some cigarettes or I'm going to plug you. Rather, they buy it themselves. So it satisfies customers in the sense of the consumer's choice.
Okay.
Now, from a medical point of view, maybe cigarettes aren't good, but I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about McDonald's makes you fat or whatever it is. I'm saying that they choose McDonald's rather than soybeans or whatever else the alternative is.
Excuse me, hold on. We have a caller. We're going to take your caller. Caller, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Question or comment?
Question.
Go ahead.
He's talking about privatizing. Let's take, for example, Chevron and Texaco. Let's deal with the racism in Chevron and Texaco. How does that help folks when you have Chevron and Texaco? What choice do you go to for black people in this country? When you go from Chevron, you go to Texaco, and you're dealing with the same racism. And you're privatizing. Let's look at Avis and Budget. If I left from Avis and went to Budget because I'm having problems at Avis, you know Avis and Budget are the same parent company?
Well, do you think that we'd be better off if all car rental places were run by government?
No.
That's not the question. I'm saying when you're talking about private business, private owned, I'm talking about racism in this country, and how does it, how private industry doesn't help the matter themselves when they're being very racist and prejudiced towards people in this country. Okay? So what I'm saying is, if I went to Avis, or if I went to Budget, if I went to Avis and I had a problem and went to Budget, but I don't know as a consumer, they're both owned by the same people.
Well, look, if they're both owned by the same people and that's such a great advantage, then there'll be greater...
It's not a great advantage. It's horrible.
Let me just finish my point. If both companies are owned by the same parent company, and this is such a great advantage, then the profits will be very high in that area, and high profits will induce other companies to come in and compete.
Okay, but what I'm saying, you're missing the point here. What I'm saying here, when I used Chevron and Texaco, for instance, we went to Chevron, we found out Chevron had racist hiring practices. Okay, when people decided, okay, we can't go to Chevron anymore, we'll switch and go over to Texaco, find out they had the same problem. Okay, so if you privatize things in this country to where the private industry are having all types of racial issues, how does that affect black folks in this country when they're going from place to place and they don't even know who's who in all of this? In other words, you don't know what's behind all of this.
Well, I think that the market deals very well with racism. If there's racism in terms of, say, customers, that means, well, let's say in terms of hiring, that means that black people or minorities aren't hired as much, that they have lower wages, and if they have lower wages, then you can make more profits by hiring them. And if you can make more profits by hiring them, that's the market's solution to the problem of racism. Look, suppose a black person is worth $10 an hour, but and a white person is also worth $10 an hour. They're each equally productive. But due to racism, the white person is making $10 an hour, but the black person is only making $7 an hour. Well, if that's true, then the employer who's hiring them is making an extra $3 an hour profit.
So that's okay?
That's great, because then what will happen, as a first step, let me just finish, because then what will happen is that the guy who hires the black worker under this scenario will put out of business the other guy because he'll be able to underprice
him. So I'm supposed to support this philosophy of business?
Yeah, it'll get rid of racism.
No, it won't. How will it get rid of racism?
Hold up. The point you just said, how will it get rid of racism? If we're being paid $7 an hour, you're being paid $10 an hour, supposedly the guy that being paid $10 an hour goes out of business. How does that have to do with anything with racism? What it looks like it has to do is the other guy making more money over the other guy, and which really is a monopoly.
Wait, the person who's hiring the white is going to go out of business. The company that's hiring the black, who isn't, whose only color is green, as in money. Namely, he doesn't care white, black, green, blue, skin is irrelevant. He's only concerned about green, as in
we life. Hear that a lot, but you know, that's only in theory. It never works practically.
Oh, no. Look, I think that's a problematic way to look at it, because theory is supposed to be a theory about reality. If it's good in theory, then it describes reality. If it doesn't describe reality, it's not a good theory.
So it's a bad theory, but it's reality.
No, I think it's a good theory. The way the market gets...
Sir, you're not describing reality, so obviously it's a bad theory.
Yeah.
Well, I think I am. I'm showing you a situation where people who engage in racist behavior go broke, which means that the people who are left aren't racist.
Wait a minute. Who goes broke?
The racist guy is going broke.
They do?
Yeah.
So why is Chevron still in business? Exxon still in business? Walmart still in business? We can go down the whole thing all day.
You have to prove to me first that they're racist. I'm saying if they're racist. But where's the evidence that they're racist?
Okay, let's look at it this way then, since you need some evidence. How many black executives are in the Fortune 500 companies? What is the percentage of black executives? What is the percentage of monies that these companies spend in black neighborhoods or where blacks will benefit? You know, I mean, it's almost non-existent.
Well, blacks are about 14% of the population. give or take, something like that, 13 or 14%.
That's the myth that they've been telling us, yes.
No, I think that's true, that black people are about 13 or 14% of the population, and certainly the CEOs are way less than that, so blacks are vastly underrepresented among CEOs. On the other hand, they're vastly overrepresented in NBA and NFL.
Okay, let's go. Let's use something closer to home here. We'll take New Orleans pre-Katrina, because we knew what the demographics were pre-Katrina. You are at Loyola. You have Tulane next door to you, two universities that cater to mostly whites. On your staff, how many blacks do you have as opposed to how many whites? I'm sure it's overwhelming. Yet you're in a black city that you pull from the pool of students that you bring locally in are mostly white, and all of the monies that are spent mostly in the white community. So we're in a predominantly black city, so how do you justify this?
I thought we were going to talk about Katrina, but I'm happy to talk about this. This is interesting also, but what the heck. I don't know the exact statistics, but I think there are very, very few black professors at Loyola. There might be two or three out of 250. Very, very few. Black students are a little higher percentage. I would guess 5%. I'm not sure. I just don't have these numbers at my beck and call. I don't see that this is racism. I mean, people who think that it's racist think that every profession should have the same proportion of people in it.
No, I don't say that. What I'm saying
is
based upon the standards of business, the business should reflect its climate. If you are in a predominantly white area, then it should reflect a predominantly white workload. If you're in a predominantly black area, it should reflect a predominantly black workload.
I don't think so. I think that there should be freedom. People should be free to hire whoever they want, as long as there's no coercion. That to me is the free society.
Well, where does this freedom come in? Because you talked about earlier, you were talking about the freedom of economic systems, the fail-safe systems, the better systems. You talked about Walmart, and you said the example you gave was if something about a pizza, if people stopped buying at a pizza store, then it would go out of business. The market would correct itself, I think is what you were trying to say. Then if that's true and correct, how in the world is big business benefiting from products that are killing people every day? Health, accidents, all you name it, in any category, they are producing weapons that are killing folk in large numbers every day. People are not able to make decisions based upon reality. They're making decisions based upon something that is called there's a term for it, subliminal subduction. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Subliminal advertising.
Yeah, which means that you are loading the gun and you are pulling the trigger and the people don't even see it coming.
Well, if you want to talk about deaths, my most recent book is on highways, which are run by government. And do you know how many people die on the highways every year? 40,000.
From what?
From motor vehicle accidents.
The government, they don't make the motor vehicles.
No, but they make the highways. They run the highways.
So you're saying that it's not the fault of the business, it's the fault of the government, because the government has the highways, but the government's not responsible for what's put on the highways.
That's right. I'm saying that if we privatized the highways and we allowed highways to compete with each other, they would come up with ways to reduce the death penalty. Not the death penalty.
Ooh, I wonder how we jump to that.
Well, you're the one that said that business is killing people en masse. I mean, they might be killing them through cigarettes, but it's a voluntary killing. And I insist that people have a right to be killed if they want to be killed by cigarettes.
I got to cut you off.
You say voluntary killing. You know what brainwashing is?
I do.
So okay. How could that be voluntary?
No. Well, my point is, why is there, or if it's not there, then it used to be. Well, I know there's a drugstore in every corner in the black neighborhood. There used to be a gun store in every corner in the neighborhood. And on every TV ad, billboards, you see liquor, smoke, and guns. You do not see that in any white communities. Period. Why?
Well, evidently, the people that are selling these products think that they'll make more profits by selling these to black people because they think that black people want these more.
White people smoke, too.
Of course. Well, there's...
So why don't they put that same... I mean, white people smoke, they drink, why don't they have no...
I think they do, but I'm assuming that your facts are correct. I've never noticed this, but stipulating that you're right.
Okay.
It's because...
Yeah. Okay, you say you have never noticed this. Around Loyola, I know you drive around there a lot.
I do.
Is there any drugs... not a drugstore. Liquor store, billboards of cigarettes, or alcohol?
There are no billboards at all, and there are no stores right there, but there are grocery stores, and grocery stores sell alcohol.
In other words, they stay out of the middle class and upper class neighborhoods. They bring it down in our neighborhoods. That's where you find it prevalent. You talk about business. Are you aware that one of the biggest businesses in this country was slavery? You're aware of that?
I am.
And that the Civil War was fought, and people think it was about the emancipation of black folk, and it had nothing to do with the emancipation of black folk. It had to do with transferring the marketplace from the private sector to the public sector. Slavery was transferred from the private sector, which was the slaveholders, and it was put on the dole or on the government shoulders.
Well, first of all, I oppose slavery. It's a coercive act, and I'm very much opposed to slavery of any kind. I don't think it was a civil war. It was a war of Southern secession. A civil war means that there are two sides wanting to fight. Each one wants to take over the whole thing, the whole government. In the War of 1861, or the War of Southern Secession, the South didn't want to take over the North. The North wanted to take over the South, so minor correction. I think, Amin, your point is sort of like, you know, there's this joke, there's a mouse on top of an elephant, and they walk across the bridge, and they make the bridge sway. And the mouse said, boy, we made that bridge sway. Well, I think your focus on cigarettes and alcohol and things like that is like the mouse problem. I think there are much more deep problems for the black community than those. I think those are the mouse problems. The elephant problems are...
Name them.
The fact that drugs are... heroin and marijuana are prohibited. And
ooh,
black...
Oh, I didn't even get to that one.
I'm getting to it. And black people are shooting each other, just like white people shot each other in Elliot Ness and the mafia when we had prohibition of alcohol in the 30s. White people were shooting each other, and some blacks. But the point is that if drugs were legalized, young black men wouldn't be butchering each other. It's a horrible thing. So to talk about some people smoking cigarettes and other people drinking booze, I think
the legal drugs.
The real problem is that they're prohibiting heroin and cocaine and marijuana, and if they were legalized, there'd be no more killings over that than there are now killings over alcohol.
Let's talk about the legal drugs then. The drug companies that sell drugs through prescriptions legally.
Yes.
And we are finding that we have more prescription drug junkies in this country than we have illegal junkies in this country.
Well, I don't think that the problem, I think, again, this is the mouse versus the elephant. I think the prescription drug problems, of which there are some, are mouse-like problems. Whereas the problem of heroin and cocaine and marijuana, that's the elephant problem. It's sort of like there's this big elephant sitting in the room and no one's talking about it. If we legalize drugs, a lot of young black people, men mainly, who will die in the next year will stay alive instead. And this is a gigantic problem. And somehow you're talking about cigarettes and people drinking alcohol and advertising and billboards. I think that this is way off the point.
Well, isn't that normally the position of big business, that to minimize what is being viewed as being the villain, when you have identified the villain, so they minimize it and try to take you off point, to miss, so you can miss the point and go chasing a dove instead of chasing the mark?
I don't think this is a business problem. I think it's a government problem. They prohibit drugs. Let me talk about another problem, I mean, that is an elephant kind of problem, and that's welfare. And what welfare has done has not, you know, you're talking about slavery before. In some sense, slavery was not as damaging, slavery was not as damaging to the black community as welfare. Because after slavery ended in 1865, the black family was still intact. For years after 1865, people were looking for each other. They were saying, you know, Emily Lou was sold up the river, Joe was sold down the river. They were trying to get their families together. As late as 1910, the white and the black families were equally intact, roughly. There was a percentage difference. Welfare started really in 1965, and nowadays many black kids are brought up in single-family houses without a man in the family. And the reason for that is welfare. It's sort of like when you put a frog in boiling water, the frog knows enough to jump out, and the boiling water is like slavery. But when you put a frog in cold water and heat it up slowly, this is the welfare, the frog doesn't know. It's very insidious. So a big, big problem is to get rid of welfare, which emasculates the black family.
We've got a call. But before we get to the call, let me just say this to you. That's the view of most white racists. Actually, welfare is nothing more than the deliverer or the system by which government monies are transferred to business through the welfare recipients. They are the carriers of the monies. Caller, you are with us. Question or comment?
Comment. I wanted to comment about the admission standards at Loyola University, at Tulane University, and University of New Orleans. While the Vietnamese population represents maybe 2% of the total of our city, there's a higher percentage of Vietnamese students in all three of those universities. Mm-hmm. Now, is that a racist thing, or is it the fact that these students worked hard, studied, got the grades, and gained admission to these fine universities?
Well, I don't think it's racist at all, nor do I think that it's racist that the blacks are, what, 90% of the NBA and 80% of the NFL? I'm not sure the exact numbers, but something like that. And in baseball, they're way more than 14%. I don't think that's racist. I think that
how is it that the Vietnamese who didn't come to our city until the early 80s, that they have managed to bring themselves to the point where they have a higher admission rate than the black community that's been here for 200 years?
Well, we've got a very good answer for you, and thank you for the call. Appreciate it. But it's quite simple. The Vietnamese are Asians. So they share the same, qualities and quantities of life that the whites share. Actually, they're kin. You have Caucasians and you have Asians. You have whites and you have yellows. They are kindred. So they're taking care of each other. And that is why you have more Vietnamese, more Asians in jobs where blacks should be. Now, you're going to tell me that blacks are not qualified, but yet you do everything you can possibly do to make sure that you keep us in a bad position. So thank you for your call and comment, but you need to really look at the situation that's going on in this country and around the world.
Well, I have a very different answer to that. There's this guy, Thomas Sowell, who I'm a big fan of. He is a black economist. Some people call him an Oreo cookie or something. I don't think so. I think he deserves a Nobel Prize in economics, not because of affirmative action, but because of his merits.
Because he agrees with you.
I agree with him. We agree with each other.
So, I mean, the same thing.
Well, that's not why I think he's so great. There are other people that agree with me that I don't think deserve Nobel Prize in economics. But I
hate
think
to cut
he
you,
does.
But we'll have to invite you back. We are run out of time. We have the fastest hour in television. And we want to thank you, Professor Block, for being with us. And we'll bring you back and we'll continue our discussions. I would just like to make a note for you.
Let me just say that I'd love to come back.
Okay. I'd like to make a note for next week. We should be having Norman Robinson from WDSU Channel 6 with us next week. He'll be here for the first half hour, so call in early, check in early, so that you can call in and have your questions ready for him. Brother Mean, do you have anything before we go? About 30 seconds.
I just wanted to, you talked about the welfare situation in slavery, but one of the reasons that people have welfare is because you're coming from broken homes, a mother and a child, no father. That's the slavery mentality. If you know the Willie Lynch letter, that's why it's welfare. It has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, you have to understand that it's been a systematic problem from the beginning of bringing us over here, in the beginning, and maintaining that same mentality, that same economic climate that is a thrust and a must in your communities to be able to champion your causes and your culture. Remember, until next week, stay strong, stay proud. Black power and black nationalism is the way. Later.